pleasure domes of Mars. A primer. I arrived on Mars somewhat rattled, but physically none the worse for wear. Miss Feng had rustled up a burnoose, jalaba, and antique polyester two-piece for me from somewhere, so that I looked most dashing, absolutely in character as a highly authentic leisure suit Larry of Arabia. I tried to inveigle her into costume, but she demurred.
"I am your butler, sir, not a party-goer in my own capacity. It wouldn't be right."
She tucked an emergency vial of aftershave in my breast pocket. It's hard to argue with such certainty, although I have a feeling that she only said it because she didn't approve of the filmy harem pants and silver chainmail brassiere I'd brought along in hope of being able to adorn Laura with them. Edgister, we dressed in a rug and trained to spit on demand. He could be my camel, just as long as nobody expected him to pass champagne through his secondary reactor coolant circuit. Jeremy emerged from storage, pallid and shaking, so Miss Feng and I improvised a leash and decided to introduce him as the White Elephant. Not that a real white elephant would have menaced the world with such a malign red-rimmed glare, or have smelled so unpleasantly fusty, but you can't have everything. A word about Abdul's digs. Abdul Al-Matsumoto, younger brother of the Emir of Mars, lives in a Gothic palace on the upper slopes of Elysium Mons, 13 kilometers above the dusty plain. Elysium Mons is so big you'd hardly know you were on a mountain, so at some time in the preceding 5 centuries, one of Abdul's more annoying ancestors vandalized the volcano by carving out an aerophysical folly, a half-scale model of Mount Everest protruding from the rim of the caldera. Thus, despite the terraforming that has turned the crumbly old war god into a bit of a retirement farm these days, Abdul's pleasure dome really is capped by a dome, of the old-fashioned, do-not-break-glass, do-not-let-air-out, unless-you-want-to-die variety. Ground Control talked Miss Feng down into the marina below the sparkly glass facets of the dome, then sent a crawler tunnel to lock onto the door before old Edgy could leap out onto the surface and test his vacuum seals. The door opened with a clunk.
"Let's go, what?"
I asked Jeremy. Jeremy sat down, swiveled one jaundiced eye toward me, and emitted a plaintive honk.
"Be like that, then,"
I muttered, bending to pick him up. Dwarf mammoths are heavy, even in Martian gravity, but I managed to tuck him under my arm, and, thus encumbered, led the way down the tube toward Abdul's reception. If you are ever invited to a party by a supreme planetary overlord's spoiled playboy of a younger brother, you can expect to get tiresomely lost unless you remember to download a map of the premises into your monocle first. Abdul's humble abode boasts 2,428 rooms, of which 796 are bedrooms, 915 are bathrooms, 62 are offices, and 147 are dungeons. There is even a choice of 4 different planetary overlord command bunkers, each with its own color-coordinated suite of doomsday weapon control consoles, for those occasions on which one is required to entertain multiple planetary overlords. If the palace was maintained the old-fashioned way, by squishy servants, it would be completely unmanageable, but it was designed in the immediate aftermath of the Martian hyperscabies outbreak of 2407 that finished off those bits of the solar system that hadn't already been clobbered by the great downsizing. Consequently, it's full of shiny clicky things that scuttle about when you're not watching and get underfoot as they polish the marble flags and repair the amazingly intricate lapis lazuli mosaics and refill the oil lamps with extra virgin olive oil. It still needs a sizable human staff to run it, but not the army you'd expect for a pile several sizes larger than the Vatican Hilton. I bounced out of the boarding tube into the entrance hall and right into the outstretched arms of Abdul, flanked by 2 stern silent types with swords, and a supporting cast of houris, hashishin, and hangers-on.
"Ralphie-san!"
he cried, kissing me on both cheeks and turning to show me off to the crowd.
"I want you all to meet my honored guest, Ralph MacDonald Suzuki of MacDonald, 5th Earl of that clan, a genuine Japanese Highland laird from Old Scotland. Ralphie is a fellow skydiver and all-around good egg. Ralph, this is... harumph! Vladimir Ilyich of Ulyanov, Chief Commissar of the Soviet Union."
Ulyanov grinned. Under the false pate, I could see it was our old drinking chum Boris the Tsarevich.
"And this... why, Edgy, I didn't recognize you in that... is it a llama? How very realistic."
"No, is meant to be a monkey," explained Wolfblack, twirling so that his false camelskin disguise flapped about.
I opened my mouth to tell him that the barrel Miss Feng had strapped to his back to provide support for the hump had slipped, but he turned to Abdul.
You like?
Jolly good, that outfit.
Pip, pip,
said Toadsworth, whirring alongside with a glass of the old neurotoxins gripped in one telescoping manipulator. I think it might have been a high-bandwidth info burst rather than a toast, but due to my unfortunate hereditary allergy to implants, I'm very bad at spotting that kind of thing.
Which way to the bar, old fellow?
That way, suggested Ibn Cutthroat, springing from a hidden trapdoor behind a Ming vase. He pointed through an archway at one side of the hall.
Be seeing you.
His eyeballs gleamed with villainous promise. A black-robed figure in a full veil was staring at me from behind two implausibly weaponized clanky hashishin at the back of the party. I got an odd feeling about them, but before I could say anything, Toadsworth snagged my free hand in his gripper and began to tug me toward the old tipple station.
Come on, inebriate, he buzzed. All enemies of sobriety must be inebriated. Pip, pip.
Jeremy let out a squealing trumpet blast close to my ear and began to kick. Not having a third hand with which to steady him, I let go and he shot off ahead of us, stubby ears flapping madly in the low Martian gravity.
Oh dear, said Miss Feng.
Why don't you just run along and see to my chambers? I asked, irritated by the thought that the bloody elephant might poop in the punch bowl.
Or worse, dip his whistle in it. Before I got there.
Leave the beast to me. I'll sort him out later.
Inebriate! Inebriate!
Cried Toadsworth, hurtling forward, the lights on his cortical turret flashing frantically.
To the party!